All right, we are in 1 Chronicles chapter 20. So the last chapter had David in a war that he did not pick, and it did turn out for the best for Israel. This is a continuation of that. So I need somebody to read verse 1 of 1 Chronicles 20. All right, so Rabbah is, we believe, their capital city. It is their principal city, and it might have been the only city of any size in the entire country of the Ammonites. One of the reasons we believe it's the capital city is because that's where the king's crown was. They found the king's crown there. It was called, their name meant City of Water, because it had an extremely reliable water source that made it very difficult for an enemy to lay siege to it. You couldn't lay siege to a city that you couldn't make thirsty. One of the things that drove people crazy when they sieged a city is the wells. You couldn't get water. It was easy enough to stop up a well and siege a city. This had an unending source. Today, this city is called Ammon, A-M-M-A-N, and it is desolate. Nobody lives in it, which is a fulfilling of a prophecy out of Ezekiel, by the way. But beneath that city, there are a lot of handmade tombs and there's a huge cistern underneath there. So that water supply is something that comes up here very shortly. David's army is very successful because what do you think they're carrying with them? What's going into battle with the army of David? God, in a way, the ark. Remember, Hitler wanted the ark in Raiders of the Lost Ark because an army that carried it before them would be undefeated. So, as long as God was on your side, but that was the belief that. But they are carrying the ark, and they're highly successful in their military endeavors at this point. The details of this story is found in 2 Samuel 11 and 12, and if you get a chance, you should go there and rehash that story so you know. Because there's much more meaning to the line, David stayed at Jerusalem. What did your Bible say exactly, Rachel, at the end of that verse? Tarried, that he tarried at Jerusalem. What version are you reading? King James? Yeah. David failed to lead. We talked about this when it came up last time. He failed to lead. He sent his army to war, and he stayed in Jerusalem. He did not go to war with his army. And that's when he saw Bathsheba. And that's when he fell into sin. The temptation was too great. He fell into sin. And just a quick recap on that story. Bathsheba got pregnant. So he brings Uriah home. So he can sleep with his wife so that Uriah would think it was his baby. And Uriah won't go in to his house. He actually slept on the threshold. Wouldn't go in and said, it's wrong for my men to sleep in the field while I sleep in my bed. So he wouldn't go in. So that didn't work. The next step, and it's the siege of this city, where David gets with Joab and says, put Uriah on the front line and yell attack and have everybody fall back. But Uriah. And so Uriah was killed at the siege of this city. In Chronicles, the guy who wrote Chronicles, the chronicler as they call him, he did not tell that story. He just says that David stayed behind. He tarried in Jerusalem. That's all he talks about. Doesn't give the rest of the story. Joab was successful in the setup with Uriah, and he was successful in the siege of this Ammonite city. Verse 2.
Then David took their king's crown from his head and bound it to weigh a talent of gold. And there were precious stones in it. And it was set on David's head. Also, he brought out the spoil of the city in great abundance.
All right, so we just heard David was in Jerusalem, but now we have David taking the king's crown from his head. What happened in this part is Joab had first captured the palace. But that wasn't enough to make the city fall. The next thing he did was he captured the water supply. They figured out where the city was getting its water, and they went there and they captured the water supply and they cut off the water. Then they're ready to do the final battle to bring the Ammonite city down, and he sends for David. He sends for David because David is the king, and David should have the honor and the glory of leading his troops into this victory against this Ammonite city. So he calls for David. David comes out. Once the battle was over, they set this crown on David's head. Now, if you see, it weighs a talent of gold. A talent of gold weighs 75 pounds. So there's a good chance the king didn't wear this crown on a daily basis. And I have a feeling David didn't wear it very long either. In today's money, let me see. I looked that up. Let me see where I wrote it. It is worth $1,734,150 if you had that crown today. it also had precious stones in it. It had jewels in it that make the value of that crown even more. The crown that King Charles wore for his coronation is called the St. Edward's crown. It's worth about $4 million because it has a bunch of jewels in it. And it only weighs 4.9 pounds. And the royal family will not wear it because it is too hard to wear 4.9 pounds. This crown weighs 75. But he had it on his head long enough for the coronation that he took it off. That whole thing for doing it with David was a symbolic gesture showing victory. He now technically was the king of this Ammonite city. This was the last of the Ammonites. This was their last defeat. Somebody read verse 3.
And he brought out the people who were in it and put them to work with saws, with iron picks, and with axes. So David did to all the cities of the people of Ammon. Then David and all the people returned to Jerusalem.
All right, so there are a lot of debate. Rachel, read your version, if you would, of that verse. Yes.
Okay. And he brought out the people that were in it and cut them with saws and with arrows of iron and with axes. Even so dealt David with all the cities of the children of Ammon, and David and all the people returned to Jerusalem.
So what did it sound like happened in the King James Version?
That he cut them.
Probably hacked them up would have been...
Yeah,
not put it to work. Other translations say that was probably a mistranslation. It doesn't fit with the character of David. So it probably meant he put them to work with saws and axes and picks, and he didn't actually chop them up in little pieces. Tell you the truth, I don't know which one's right on that. I know there's a lot of debate on it. Either way, he eliminates, no matter how that happened, he eliminates the Ammonites as a military force, and either they're all dead or they're all now slave labor. One or the other. This city is in ruins. It has existed since this time of this battle. That was one thing I wanted to see, if maybe it meant that he had them tear down their own city. But the city was there. It has been, different historians have talked about this city before it was completely destroyed and left in shambles and abandoned. So
that's
apparently...
That's what my study Bible says. That's what my study Bible says, that he had them destroy their own houses instead of destroying them as a people instead of land.
Which to me would have made the most sense. But like I say, when I went and I looked at the history of the city, it shows that it was inhabited to 400 B.C. So... I don't know. Honestly, I don't know what this exactly means. The point of the whole thing is that they are no longer a military power. They quit being a military power after that. This victory was pretty complete. Israel had the upper hand, and now they turn to war with the Philistines still. The Philistines were a group of people that were never quite conquered. They were defeated in various battles along the way. They eventually got pushed back into their own country and out of Israel. But they were never pushed completely out of the land that God gave Israel. They were still in the promised land. So we turn to a battle with these people. Somebody read verse 4.
Now it happened afterward that war broke out at Gezer with the Philistines, at which time Sibechai the Husholite killed Sipai, who was one of the sons of the giant, and they were subdued.
Okay, so the giant, well, that's my guess. Actually, I mean, if I was going to tell you a story about a giant in Israel, I would probably be talking. If I referred to the person as a giant, I'm thinking that would always point to one person, Goliath. We do know that everybody in these next few verses that is killed is a relative of Goliath. We do know that for a fact. Whether this guy was a son of Goliath is not clear. And I'll explain why here shortly when we get back down to him. The warrior, the valiant warrior, his name is Sibechai, and he was just a warrior for David from the town of Husha. Husha still exists today. It's considered a town of Palestine, though, not a town of the Promised Land. It's in the Promised Land, though, but you know how they broke that thing up over time. It's in Palestine now. But anyway, that's where he was from. He was one of the valiant warriors of David. Verse 5.
There was war again with the Philistines, and Elanon, the son of Jair, slew Lami, the brother of Goliath, the Gittite, whose spear staff was like a weaver's beam.
So, this guy actually kills the brother of Goliath. There is confusion in the Bible because in Samuel it says he killed Goliath. Just so you know. So I get sometimes a point of contention if you ever get in an argument with somebody who knows how to argue against the validity of the Bible, they'll say, explain that verse with one in Samuel, 2 Samuel. One says he killed Goliath, one says he killed the brother of Goliath, and we have the claim of David killing Goliath. So who killed Goliath would be their argument. But this guy was definitely his brother, and he was definitely one of the giants that was there. Somebody read verse 6.
Yet again there was a war at Gath, where there was a man of great stature, with 24 fingers and toes, six on each hand, and six on each foot. And he also was born to the giant.
Oh, go ahead and read 7.
So when he defied Israel, Jonathan, the son of Shimea, David's brother, killed him.
All right, so all of these giants, Goliath included, are descendants of a giant named Rapha. That's why there's confusion at first verse. Was he son of Rapha or was he a son of Goliath? Because they were all descendants of Rapha. Would all be counted as sons. Rapha is considered to be a Nephilim. And so, somebody tell me what a Nephilim is. I've told you all before. What's a Nephilim? Rachel knows, I can tell. You know, Lana?
She does.
Speak.
Isn't it like
when
the flying
eagle
like
how they were doing? I'm not so sure. No, I think I heard it. Yes, it was the offspring. I'm just teasing you, Lana. You're doing great. You're doing great. Yes, it is the offspring from the mating of a fallen angel, one of the demons, with a woman of earth, with a human woman. These guys had great physical strength, power. They were great warriors. They were very intimidating. They are the reason, I believe, that God flooded the earth was to eliminate them. Only one family had not been contaminated with his Nephilim bloodline, and that was Noah's. But when we get to the Promised Land, there they are again. So, actually, in research for this one, Some people believe that the flood didn't wipe them out, that they were able to survive the flood. I don't think that's what happened at all. I just think Satan thought, well, that worked so good the last time. I know where the promised land is because it was promised to Abraham 600 years before they got there. So let me just do it all over again, and we'll fill that whole area up with Nephilim, and then they'll have to fight these big giant people. That's where the Nephilim came back in. And don't quote me on that, because that's not clearly spelled out in the Bible. But when the Bible says the flood killed every living thing, I'm going to have to go with that. All the Nephilim died. The fact they're back again doesn't mean they survived the flood. It means that Satan did it again. That's all that means. Now, by this time in history, God may have stopped that. God might have finally told them, will you please stop mating with the women because you're making all these abnormal people. We don't want any more abnormal people. Can't have this. You guys, this is over and done. We've taken the promised land. You guys just have to die out. Satan would have had to have listened to such a thing. So if he couldn't create new Nephilim, how do these giants keep reappearing? Reproducing. If I want to keep a line pure, what do I do to the line? Okay, I know this is West Virginia, but you all should know inbreeding is wrong. Inbreeding causes all kinds of abnormalities like six fingers and toes. I believe that in order to keep their giant stature, these families of giants started resorting to inbreeding. I believe the evidence of that is shown in this guy. The abnormality of having six fingers and six toes. Again, not quoted in the Bible, so don't quote it as a biblical fact. Just me trying to figure out how the story fit together. And I could be wrong. But I do believe that this is how this man came into being such a sideshow circus freak. You know what I mean? It was because his parents were way too closely related. Because at this time, that had been abolished by God. That had only been allowed at the early part. I mean, Adam and Eve, their offspring didn't have any choice but to marry his sister. Noah's family didn't have a whole lot of choice but to marry sisters and nieces and all that kind of stuff. Wasn't a whole lot of choice. This time in history, that was now considered wrong. These guys were probably still doing it. Okay, verse 8.
These were born to the giant in God, and they fell by the hand of David and by the hand of his servants.
All right, so how do you think, or why do you think Israel won over the giants? It definitely wasn't physical strength or power. Giants would always have the advantage, almost always. I have seen some pretty big guys who are pretty slow because they're so big, but these guys are warriors. These guys are trained in battle. So you're battling an enemy who can probably outreach you by at least a foot. His sword is probably 2 feet longer than yours. His shield is bigger. His spear is bigger and heavier and longer. I mean, these guys have every advantage possible in a hand-to-hand combat. Why did Israel win? Why did the soldiers win?
Because God is involved.
That's right. Why did God want to make sure these guys were defeated?
Get rid of the giants.
Get rid of the giants, one thing in particular, but this still happens today with people who are not giants. Why does God take some people off the battlefield? Okay,
God. This seems like an idea, but like how God told David that he would keep his line alive and that Jesus would come from his line, maybe he wanted to get them so that they wouldn't infiltrate him.
Well, yeah. Now, that was part of the reason from before. But at this point, these guys have... they've done something that is requiring God, that has aroused God's anger. What was it? Mike just said it. I'll give you a hint. It was in the scripture you just read. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe it wasn't in that one. Let me see. Oh, it's in verse 7.
Defied Israel.
Yeah, these guys stood in defiance to God. And they staked their whole entire reputation on that. They made fun of the Israelites. They made fun of the God of Israel. That's what got David so upset. David didn't care if they made fun of Israel. He made fun of the God of Israel. Goliath had to go down for that. That's why God allowed the little old shepherd boy, wasn't even a man yet, to kill the Philistines' most valiant warrior. Goliath was the guy everybody looked up to. He was their man. He was the biggest, baddest soldier they had until a shepherd boy took him out. Wasn't taken out because David was such a great shot with a slingshot. He was taken out because he had defied God. He stood in complete abject defiance to God. These guys made the exact same mistake. They made the exact same mistake of going out and putting down the God of Israel. God said, well, that's all well and good, but your time's up. You're going to be defeated by somebody lesser than you. It's the same thing he told Satan. You will be defeated by somebody lesser than you. Man is Jesus as man. Man is created lesser than the angels. Satan was an angel. So the lesser defeated the greater, even though we know supernaturally which one was which. But physically, Satan was defeated by man. God in man form, but still a man. Same thing here. Any questions on that short little chapter? You have to remember the Ammonites are completely taken care of, all because of the insult. Remember, they insulted the messengers who went with a word of sympathy to a king. They embarrassed them, and it escalated to now they have lost everything. They're no longer a nation.
My study Bible says that this battle went, the wind from this battle allowed them to completely take over the whole promised land.
From the Philistines, you're saying? Yeah. Well, you know, it might have. I'd have to look and see. I do know that, to say what tribe this area was given to, I can't remember which tribe.
I thought it was the Canaan.
Trying to think. I didn't sound right. I can't remember the tribe. I do know that when it was divided by Joshua, this tribe never completely conquered the inhabitants. They were never, and it was Philistines. They were never quite completely wiped out. That's when they got stronger and they started invading Israel. And David came in as king and he pushed them back to the land they had claimed before. This does eliminate the Philistines, but I don't think the Philistines were ever completely conquered. They might have been pushed clear out of the promised land, but I don't think the Philistines ever lost completely. And the problem is Israel's sin. Think of what was going on with David at this time. They skip it here. But David had just been berated by Nathan for his affair with Bathsheba. Yet God still gave David a massive victory with the Ammonites. Why would he do that? Why wouldn't he have punished David with the Ammonites? Why wouldn't he say, you're in sin. Sorry, you're on your own. Go out there and fight him if you want to. Good luck. I'll see you when you get back, if you get back. He didn't. He hung around. He made sure, because it was God's will, that the Ammonites be defeated. They needed to be eliminated for the problems they had been causing. They were causing all kinds of trouble for Israel. Remember, they went out and got their friends to come help, and then they got friends of their friends to help, and everybody gets defeated, and now they lose their whole thing. What happened to chastise David? How did God chastise David for the affair? What did he do?
Caused his son to die.
Caused his son to die. That was step one. If you remember, David's life after that came, his family life became.
There's a lot of punishment. That sin is being in this day from the beginning of the night.
Well, that's so. Yeah, David's family became the tool of punishment. His son raped his daughter. The other son killed that son. Then one of the sons chased David out of the country. David's family fell apart right after this thing. the punishment, God could have used the Ammonites to punish David, but the Ammonites had to be gone, so he used David's family to punish David. And it went pretty bad for him from there. But it's how God works. We might not understand it. We would probably have rather David not have so many problems. And have, if he was going to have trouble, it should be outside his palace, not inside his palace. But God saw otherwise. So, any other comments or questions? Nope. I told you that was a short one. Of course, 8 verses. What do you do?